Welcome to Meet, Act, and Part. A Masonic podcast hosted by Midnight Freemasons Greg Knott, Darren Lanas, Todd Creason, and Bill Hostler. The views, opinions and experiences that are expressed by the hosts or guests as individual Freemasons do not reflect the official position of any Grand Lodge, appendant body, or Masonic authority to which the hosts or guests belong. And now on with the show.
And welcome to another exciting episode of Meet, Act, and Part. And tonight we've got a special guest that we'll get to Roger here in a minute. But as we always do, we'll introduce ourselves. I am one of your co-hosts, Greg Knott.
And I'm Darren Lanas. Bill Hostler is recovering from a surgical procedure. So we wish Bill all the best and Godspeed and hopefully a fast return back to our podcast.
And yeah, Bill, we wish you good health, and I wish you were here with us because we know you'd love to torture Roger on some of the questions. So our special guest tonight, he's been with us, I think, a couple of other times, is Roger Van Gordon. And Roger is past Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Indiana, and he's on Supreme Council and, like most of the rest of us, a whole bunch of other stuff that would take a whole hour probably to list off the Masonic resume. Equally important, he is a member of the Masonic Restoration Committee of the Grand Masters organization. And Roger, we'll have you explain more.
It's fun.
But anyway, Roger just returned from the Conference of Grand Masters, and we asked him to come on tonight or today to really talk about some of the efforts they're going, because they're really doing some great stuff. And Roger has been at the forefront of this for a few years as one of the true leaders within that organization. So it's the Masonic Renewal Committee of the Conference of Grand Masters of the Masons in North America, if I read the official title here correctly. So, Roger, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, I was at a meeting here about a year ago. The Masonic Renewal Committee stepped out for a minute, came back in the room, and I found out that I was elected chairman. And so, yeah, so I'm chairman of it now. But yes, we had Grand Masters Conference this last week in Seattle. For those that may not be familiar with the Masonic Renewal Committee, we are a functioning committee of the Conference of Grand Masters. We've been around since 19, but we work in the background, so to speak. We do work for Grand Lodges. So it's not something like that probably brothers are familiar with, like the Masonic Service Association, which is also a functioning group within the Conference of Grand Masters. The George Washington Masonic National Memorial, another functioning group within the Grand Masters Conference. Our committee is more in the background, and what we do is we share best practices and proven strategies among the Grand Lodges of the conference. That there are 65 Grand Lodges that compose the conference, and we just share information. We're a conduit to share information of some things that are best practices and proven strategies. Some of the things that we're working on right now for the Grand Lodges is that we have a membership dashboard, and what it is, it's based on Google Looker Studio. And we can take a Grand Lodge's data set, membership, annual membership numbers, raising, suspensions, those kind of figures that you find in the proceedings in a Grand Secretary's report, and create trend lines. And by that, you're able to look at some things. For example, you may remember that the Grand Lodge had a program for restorations or something a few years ago. And you can take this data set in Google Looker Studio, compare it to the previous years. You might see a spike that year, a spike over 2 years. And what it allows you to do, it's a visual to show you the effect of maybe certain programs or certain policy changes or things like this. And then the power of it is that since it has other Grand Lodges as well, you can lay your Grand Lodge's timeline against theirs and see if there's any other kind of spikes. For example, everyone saw a bump when the Dan Brown books came out. And you can see this in all the data sets. Right now, we've got six Grand Lodges are part of it. And both Supreme Councils, Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, Southern Jurisdiction. So what's really interesting there for you guys, you can take, I can't remember if Illinois is yet on board. I know that the group that handles it within our committee has talked to them. But once they do, you can take Illinois Council of Liberation, because in the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, there's even at the Council of Liberation level data, and you can compare that with your Grand Lodge data and see if you see any changes in a trend and what could have caused the change in the trend, both up and down. With the Grand Lodges and Supreme Councils, you can easily see the effect of COVID. Everybody got hit with COVID. Some Grand Lodges recovered quicker than others. And that's just a question, what in their Grand Lodge culture, what in their part of the country caused them to recover quicker from COVID than maybe other parts of the country. So I think that over time, this is going to prove to be very beneficial for Grand Lodges, especially as we get more and more Grand Lodges involved, because that's going to help with some policies on things like restoration and such. And maybe even you'll find that some other data points where there's been a change in a few Grand Lodges because of some policy change or practice change that they incorporated. If I understand right, I was just talking to Sir Tim Whelan out of Ohio. He's past Grand Master of Ohio, and he works for a technology company, and he developed this in Google Looker Studio, and he's part of a team now promoting it and taking the data. I believe he says that coming out of the conference, there's at least 10 Grand Lodges that said that they would supply him with data. So maybe here within 6 months, there'll be 16 Grand Lodges of the 65. And I just think, as with everything in this fraternity, probably after 2 or 3 years, there'll be a majority. I doubt that we'll ever have 100% participation, but I do think that we'll have a good majority probably here in the next 3 to 5 years. And then it's really going to make a difference, because Grand Lodges will be able to see the effect of policy changes or such programs, special programs, what effects they may have had in other jurisdictions.
You know,
so that's one thing we're working on that we've got works.
You know, on the data piece, I want Darren to weigh in on this too. You know, that's, I think, for a lot of us that just sort of observe from afar, you know, decisions of some of the, you know, Grand Lodges and appendant bodies. And we often wonder, you know, they implement a program, whatever it might be, but what is the analytical part of it to know if it was successful? How do you define success? And we've often wondered, you know, what is the data behind it? Especially, you know, there's so many people in the fraternity, especially the younger folks that, you know, they work in IT, they work in, you know, these areas that they're data driven. This is what they're doing every day. So they're asking questions of leadership. Are you using the data to help make decisions? And if you are, what's the data source? So I think it's a great thing you got going. And I want Darren, because Darren does work in IT and does a lot of things with data. Darren, I want you to weigh in to see if you have any questions on that.
I don't know that I have questions. I'm happy to hear that there's an attempt to kind of use data-driven, you know, information to look at and to help shape Grand Lodge or other appendant body leaderships, you know, policies. One of the things, Roger, that we've been writing about recently, we had kind of about a month there where we really were doing a deep dive into leadership. And one of the main takeaways that I had is that, you know, guys that are my age and younger are the ones that are going to be having to make very difficult decisions in, you know, the next 10 to 15 years as we see the membership trends continue to decline. And with that, we're going to have obviously more lodges close or consolidate. We're going to have certain appendant bodies that may only have one instance of that organization in a Grand Lodge jurisdiction. So one of the things that I've been, you know, kind of harping on is that we need to take data and look at data and look at lodges in Masonic areas, districts, what have you, and start planning now based upon the data of, you know, basically a lodge succession plan. So for example, you know, I'm in the 7th Eastern District here in Illinois, and we've got, let me try to count them off the top of my head. I may be off by one or two, but we got
7 lodges, I think, isn't that
7? Yeah, I was going to say 7 or 8. 7 lodges, for example, 3 of those, St. Joe, Ogden, and Homer, which, you know, I'm a member of St. Joe and Homer, Greg's a member of all 3, are within a 5-mile radius of each other. And yeah, they're very small towns. And, you know, unfortunately, the writing on the wall is that probably at some point, those 3 will become 1.
Sure.
And so the question is that, you know, shouldn't we be using, I guess, the data right now to try to do some sort of, as I said, lodge succession planning, where we look at that and we look at the trends in membership and we say to ourselves and be honest with ourselves and say, look, you know, X lodge brought in 1 guy over the past 5 years. This lodge has brought in 3 in the past year. This lodge has brought in, you know, 1 in the past 10 years. I'm just arbitrarily throwing numbers out there. But, you know, on top of that, this lodge has had 3-4 members pass away or demit, what have you, you know, suspend for non-payment. But, you know, basically a net loss and gain, and where can we maybe look at, I guess, getting ahead of the curve and really trying to maybe urge some of these lodges that may be on life, maybe near life support, to start thinking about, you know, consolidation now rather than when their back's up against the wall.
You know, I in business, you hear the term right size, right? And that's basically what you're talking about is right sizing the turn. And the other opportunity, because you mentioned the 3 lodges that you guys are associated with, we had something similar here in the north end of the county where I live, and 2 lodges ended up selling their property, and the 3 lodges didn't consolidate, but they all meet in the 1 lodge hall, and they all kept their identity, and they are functioning and doing as they've done before. And this is now, and it's at least over 10 years. So it isn't just something that happened here in the last year or two. I mean, this is something that happened about 10 years ago. And so I know I understand exactly what you're saying, but what they did, instead of merging the lodges per se, they just kept their own identity. They just all 3 use the same building now. I've often said, if you've got whatever the requisite number of quorum is in your jurisdiction, in Indiana, it's 7. I've said, if you've got 7 brothers and they really like each other and they get together once a month to do Mason stuff and they feel that they're growing, they're benefiting from it, that's a good lodge. You know, maybe they're not raising a bunch of candidates, but maybe the fellowship, the learning that they're doing, just those 7 guys, give them a charter, let them do their stuff. One of the things I've noticed with consolidations that's, and you guys have seen it too, is that there's always a lodge that's the loser. Okay. X lodge merges with Y lodge. They merge into Y lodge, and maybe X lodge had just 7 guys left. But when they merge into Y Lodge, and maybe they've got 10 or 12 guys that are active, the 7 guys from the original lodge over time just disappear. And so now the only benefit was that the receiving lodge has a few more members, But they really didn't advance the number of brothers that are truly active on a monthly basis. And so that's why I really like what the name of the town is Hope, Indiana. And they had a nice building, and the lodge that was in Clifford, Indiana, just like you point out, Clifford's like 7 miles from Hope. And then the lodge at Hartsville, Indiana, again, it's 5-6 miles from Hope. Those two lodges sold their property. They all meet at Hope, all three lodges. One meets first week, second, and second week, third week kind of thing. They have officers' lines. They're doing their thing just as they always done before. But instead of the two lodges merging into Hope and those brothers over time just disappearing, you've got three active lodges with, you know, maybe 30 or 40 brothers meeting once a month instead of a merger and only 10 or 12 brothers are meeting in that building once a month. And so that's where I think that sometimes we get caught up in lodge and building are the same thing. And I think that we have an opportunity to do these other things. Talk about lodges in a building. My lodge, my home lodge, we're doing this lodge in a box idea. We, 2 years ago, and it's amazing how this changes the complexion or the composition of the lodge. 2 years ago, we had terrible, terrible rainstorms. Maybe it was a little over 2 years ago now. I may have lost my timeline, but sometime a little over maybe 2 years ago or so. We had terrible rainstorms, got a terrible leak down the walls. The bottom floor is a dining room. There was water standing all over the place. So we had a brother that's a contractor. We had him come and look at our roof. And he was up there for maybe, I don't know, wasn't all that long, maybe 20 minutes at most, came back down. And he says, you know, the building was built in 1914. And he goes, you know, this whole attic area is just covered with asbestos. And we'll have to start it somewhere around $100,000. Well, there's only 50 members. There's only 50 members of the lodge. And so what we did is we ended up selling the building and basically for the property. A neighbor bought it to expand his property. And we were talking about moving to the name of the near town is Flat Rock, Indiana. We talked about moving to the volunteer fireman department that's there, his little country rural area. But they've got a real nice like annex to their fire station, and they rent it out for events. And we talked about we could maybe move there and do a lodge in a box. Just take the paraphernalia we need to have a lodge and keep it there and have a lodge there. And then we don't live very far, or the lodge hall isn't very far from the Rainbow Girls have a camp here near us. And they offered us to meet at their camp. And they have a real nice building, kind of a dormitory kind of thing with a big common area. And they even built us a closet to put all of our stuff in. And for the amount of money they charge us every time we meet, we could meet there 30 times a year and still not touch, and still not spend all of our dues money. And so what that did is that we said, you know, we don't have a whole lot of business because we don't have any bills. The only bill we pay is to the Rainbow Girl Foundation. And we don't have to worry about taking care of the building. And so we started inviting brothers in to do presentations. And instead of just giving a presentation, make it conversational. And after a period of time, we would set up for the stated meeting, and guys were like, let's get this business over with so we can get to the presentation and have this conversation about masonry. The other thing that's happened, now remember, right about the time that we had all this rain, we were struggling little country lodge. We meet monthly, so we'd have 12 stated meetings a year, and there were at least two or three that we didn't have a quorum. Since we've moved, and since we have this kind of energy now, we have yet to have, and a quorum's your seven, we have yet to have any meetings less than 10. most of the times it's between 12 and 16 members show up for the meeting. And we just read at the last stated meeting two petitions. And over the course of the last year, 5 years, I think we only have raised one candidate over the period of 5 years. And now we have two petitions. And I think what's done that is the energy that's been created by us changing our meetings and what we do when we're together, which changed because we got rid of the building and went to a different concept of what is Lodge. We see Lodge as us. We don't tie it to a building anymore. It's about us. And it completely changed the composition of the Lodge. Just completely. It's a different Lodge today than it was two and a half years ago. And so I think that is something that I recommend to people is especially what you just talked about. I see what happened over here at Hope. These two lodges sold their property. The three lodges are meeting in the same building. So you've got 30 or 40 guys that were active in Freemasonry before that still are, as opposed to the losing lodges, those guys going away. And then you've got our situation where we use a facility that's not necessarily a Masonic Lodge hall, but we're a functioning Masonic Lodge nonetheless. And actually, we're doing better than we've done. So I think that if with a little creative thought, there's still opportunities to have a large number of Masonic Lodges.
Do you, we focus so much on consolidation and closures. Is there ever any discussion, Roger, in the circles you run in about expansion of new lodges? And to go back to our original point about some of the data, is there areas of, say, Illinois or Indiana that are void of Masonic lodges, for a long time, and they would be a logical, opportunity to look at for expansion? When I look at the western suburbs of Chicago, and certainly there's lodges there now. But, to your point, are we so focused on being facility managers that we lose track of, the core function? And there's opportunities to expand, but we're so tied to the old business model that we won't allow ourselves to look at things in new ways.
Well, it's funny you should ask. Because, yes, there's, in Indiana, we've been calling them lodge deserts, where 20 years ago and before, and a lot of them are smaller communities, of course. Mm-hmm. There's portions of Indiana where there used to be, maybe 20 lodges between this big city, that city, and now there's four or five or six type of thing. In Shelby County, my home county, there is a town that lost its Masonic Lodge that absolutely, I still can't figure out why, because there's like, it's not a big number, but there's like 500 or 600 people in the town. And then when you add the surrounding area of the town, well, my lodge is like, I just give you a story, and Flat Rock has got less than 500 people in it. And so I think we've lost some opportunities like that. I think that to answer your question, I think it's got something to do with recruitment and our idea of recruitment and solicitation. Perfect example, north side of Indianapolis is a town, Carmel. And Carmel, from 1960 to today, is at least 10 times, if not more, growth from a population of 1960 to where it is today, at least 10 times, like I said, possibly more. But there was just one Masonic Lodge there. Well, another Masonic Lodge has just now started in the last year. But we've asked ourselves those questions because there's a lot of what were towns around Indianapolis that in the last, 50 years have just exploded into bedroom communities. And they had one lodge in 1960, and they still got one lodge in that town today, even though the population's so much bigger. And I just wonder sometimes if it's because of our hesitation, because of solicitation and recruitment. I remember reading, and I'm sure you guys have too, early in your in the history of your state, when some of these communities started springing up, there would be an advertisement in a newspaper that would say, we're forming a lodge of master of Masons. Any Masons in the area, please contact us. And that wasn't unusual. But we don't even think of doing something necessarily like that today. I don't know if we would even put on Facebook, like Carmel, Indiana, Facebook thing, or forming a Masonic, another Masonic lodge in Carmel, all interested Masons contact us at this email address or something like that. And you sit there and say, yeah, Roger, but you're talking about Master Masons. Yes, but non-Masons see that. And I'm sure back then, as well as happened today, non-Masons see that maybe want to be a Mason or interested in Masonry would go ahead and contact that guy anyway. And I'm sure that a lot of Masons became Masons in those days because of these advertisements, that they maybe were interested in being a Mason or heard about Masonry and would go ahead and contact the man anyway. I'm not a Mason, but I live in the town. I might be interested, that kind of thing. That we don't even think of doing that today. For just like I said, Carmel's grown at least 10 times. But for 50 years, or for 60 years thereabouts, it just had the one Masonic Lodge. And it could have easily supported two or three.
So those types of ideas, that's some of the work that your committee, you know.
Yeah, those are things that we ask about. Because it's funny, just like this example, Greg, it's interesting, if you study Masonic history, it's interesting to see attitudes that our brothers had a century ago, that somehow those attitudes are different today. Just like this example, where there would be announcements in newspapers. Now, of course, we use social media, of course, now, but before the social media, we didn't do a lot of any of that. I think social media has helped us realize that you can talk about Freemasonry in public, and maybe the social media will help us in the future fix some of these things. Just like I said, I mean, the lodges in Shelby County should do something with this one town. It's called Morristown. Morristown's got a not only a website, but they got a social media presence. And that's something that they should maybe think about doing. Hey, we're thinking about starting a Masonic Lodge in Morristown. Any brothers, any Masonic brothers interested, please contact us. And you don't know, there may be some other people in Morristown that, yeah, I'd be interested in joining the Masons. You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to.
In Indiana just takes 10. It just takes 10 to start a Masonic Lodge in Indiana.
And see, in Illinois, I think, Darren, isn't it 20, I believe?
Well, yeah.
And of course, you know, I think that's the beauty of your committee and the Conference of Grandmasters in general is, you know, that's one thing that's different than Rotary or Lions Club. You know, they have national governing bodies. Of course,
yes.
In North America, each state and province in Canada and probably Mexico, each has its own local Grand Lodge.
Exactly.
You can come together with that national foresight to try to spur these ideas that sometimes, you know, maybe wouldn't take off locally if they didn't have, you know, minds from across the world, or the North America in this case, you know, saying, hey, how can we get better? What can we do to improve? What can we do differently and spur those ideas? So I applaud, you know, the work you're doing.
Thank you.
I wish others would maybe, you know, pay a little more attention to the great work there. You know, because we're going to need it. I mean,
yeah,
we've had these conversations for 60 years of our.
Oh, I know.
You know, the thing about it,
Greg, and it's human nature. I live in my own little island, and this is the way it's been. And this is the way it's always been. And it's the thing about that you read often. Like even Twain. And Mark Twain's made comments about the beauty of traveling beyond your town, your state, just a world travel, if you can afford to do that, the changes it causes in you. And I think that's where I think that the strength of the Conference of Grand Masters is that if it didn't exist, everybody would live in their own little silos. And if change did come, it would come even slower just because of travel of ideas. So no, I think that it's beneficial for what you just said. It's an opportunity to learn what is going on someplace else. And is there something from that I can learn to improve my own condition?
So what other things are you talking about?
And let's see, here's something that's exciting. The Supreme Council, well, first of all, the Messiah Renewal Committee, unlike the Messiah Service Association that I mentioned, and unlike the George Washington Messiah National Memorial that I had mentioned, we don't receive any per capita from Grand Lodges. Your Grand Lodges pay a per capita, and it's different amounts, to both of those groups for them to operate. The only money we get is if a Grand Lodge gives us some money or an independent body gives us some money. The Supreme Council, NMJ, has given us some money to plug into artificial intelligence to see if there are some tools in AI. We've got some brothers on the committee that are either engineers or have worked or work in IT. We're going to reach out to some other brothers around the country. And what we're interested in investigating first is something like ChatGPT to help arrive at solutions, to help maybe organize programs, to help with Masonic education and research, looking at developing some chatbots that Grand Lodge could put on a website, looking at some of the talking avatars, things like One Hour and some other companies like that, that they will create you a talking avatar that we could load in Masonic education pieces or things like this. What we know is you can read studies on this, that especially a lot of it's age driven. If a man would rather watch a video or read a book or a booklet, and it's very prevalent among younger of the age group that they'd much rather watch a 5-minute video than read a booklet per se. And that's not going to get smaller over time just because of the use of technology, the use of video and such, that we see what's happened with newspapers in the country, right? We get all of our news either Facebook or Twitter, or what X now, I guess it's called. It used to be Twitter. Or we go to a website and read it. But it's still snippets of what it may have been, you know, a generation ago. So we think that there's an opportunity to advance Masonic education and things like mentoring and with the use of AI. And the NMJ's generously given some money. Like I said, we've got some guys on the committee that have engineering backgrounds or IT backgrounds, and they're going to go out and get some other helpers in this too. That our hope is at next year's Grand Masters Conference, we're able to do a demonstration of what AI can do for a Grand Lodge if they'll put some money and time into it. And we know they've got brothers that work in technology that they could rely on to help them build some of these tools and advance the craft, help lodges, like I said, just for things like psych education or mentoring or even idea generation. I went to ChatGPT, so I just found this stuff fascinating. So I bought the $20 a month package, and I plugged in. I just picked a county in Indiana. And I said, okay, I'm a Mason in Madison County, Indiana, and I want to grow my lodge. Can you tell me how to do that? And it just spit out a bunch of ideas. And I said, well, first thing I need to know is how many men could or might be interested in joining. So I took the data from the NMJ, you know, those the studies they did on X number of men, X percent of men, if they knew about Freemasonry, would be interested in joining. I took that percentage and cut it in half. Cut it in half. And then I asked it questions about the population, the number of men over the age of 18. I looked at our demographic. I said, this is the demographic that we would probably choose from. Atheists wouldn't join. So take the percentage of men that's believed to be have some type of religious faith, use national standards, go ahead, apply national standards to this to come out with those numbers. And by the time I absolutely pared it down with every conceivable, yeah, this could be a guy that would be interested. I knew how many men were Masons. I think there's four lodges in the county. I knew how many men there were that were members of those four lodges. And the number it came back with is that county could grow four times in terms of members. And remember, I took the NMJ's figure and cut it in half. Now, then I said, well, you give me a bunch of ideas and some stuff. How can I get more visibility in this county? How do I reach these men? And so it spit out a bunch of other ideas. And I said, boy, those are some great ideas. I said, the one I really like is you mentioned here about being part of a local festival, being a sponsor or participating in a local festival. I don't know anything about my county. Are there local festivals in this county? And kabam, it came out with like five or six festivals that are in the county every year. I said, you know what? I don't know who the people are that organize this festival. Who is it that I'd contact? Can you give me contacts? It came back with phone numbers and email addresses for these people and gave me names. I said, boy, I don't know. How do I approach them? Can you write me in maybe an email that I should use or could use to open the door? Bam, kicks out an email, tells this person at this festival about Freemasonry, tells it it's got five lodges in the county, names them. Obviously, it went out to one of the websites because it says Freemasonry in this county has existed since like 1855, something like this, and talks about how the lodges would love to partner with the festival, help at the festival, things like this. It took me longer to type in my questions than it did for this thing to give me all this information. It was just incredible.
You know, Darren and I, we talk technology sometimes. Darren, what do you think? AIs or a place for it in Freemasonry? Or what do you think?
How would
you describe that?
I'm going to be honest. Right now, AI is, to Roger's point, a very quick search engine. But I would simply be very hesitant to believe that it is advanced far enough to trust it to have an avatar, to do any interface with the public, just because of you read, you know, even recently there's this image generator that they had to shut down because it was generating, you know, adult images, various different things. So I'm just from the standpoint, I don't think the technology is robust enough quite yet to trust it to do some of the things that you're asking it to do, Roger. And so I'd be very hesitant to trust it to be a public interface. I think that there are a few things that need to be put in place with AI. I think that there needs to be, and I know they're working on this, but there needs to be essentially some sort of agreement on what AI should be doing and what it shouldn't be doing.
No, I think that you're right there.
And then secondly, for Freemasonry, that's a difficult question because, you know, I mean, I'm going to be quite honest. If we we have guys that will clutch their pearls and point to the landmarks anytime you look at something that's going to maybe be progressive for the craft. So I will say that, you know, what I see as a danger of AI is that, you know, well, when it comes a point of, and I think it can be used for a lot of good things, but I just see the potential right now for just some PR that maybe Freemasonry doesn't really want to deal with if, you know, if done incorrectly. So I would say slow and steady with AI will hopefully win the race at some point. But, you know, there are things that I don't think it can replace, but I fear that Grand Lodges, if they, you know, may want to use it to replace, for example, you know, here in Illinois, there's talk about not enough people are learning the explanatory lectures. So there's talking about potentially putting them on video. So,
yes.
I mean, if you take that kind of extrapolate that forward at some point, you know, what's to stop a guy from having a chatbot on his phone and just typing in, you know, give me the explanatory lecture for, and then having AI recite it? Is that good or bad? I don't know. But, you know, again, what I look at is, you know, again, data-driven decision-making. And I just don't think that all the data is there to make a qualified decision regarding AI and what its role in Freemasonry and honestly other parts of the world should be. I did have a question for you as I was, you know, you were talking. What is the age or age range of the youngest member on your renewal committee?
Well, it's an interesting thing that we're talking about right now. How the renewal committee operates, is created, because it's a committee of the conference, right? And you're either a past grandmaster or you are appointed by one of the appendant bodies that we're associated with. We have a representative from the Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction, Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, Canadian Jurisdiction. We have two representatives from the Shriners. And the reason they have two, because they cover the whole area. And we have a representative from DMLA, and we have a representative from the Grand Encampment Knights Templar. And one of the things that some of this work has caused us to realize, especially our data dashboard and our conversations with AI, is that we just don't have the people with the backgrounds. We have some engineers and stuff like this. And so one of the things that we're going to start doing is an outreach and create what we would call special subcommittees that these brothers wouldn't be members of the board, but they would still work on behalf of the Masonic Renewal Committee, and they would be Master Masons of varying age, but they have a background in whatever it is that we're working on. For example, if it's something with, like I said, the AI, we would look for brothers with the engineering backgrounds. If to the membership dashboard, we'll work with brothers that have statistical or IT or engineering type of backgrounds, because that's been a lot of the problem all along. And it's been problems in Grand Lodge for a number of years, because you have these committees, and maybe you don't have any past masters. They can fill some of these committee roles, then you have to go out and search for some brothers that maybe just, you know, maybe Master Masons. They just haven't gotten to be Master of their lodge yet. And so this was something that's been going on for some time that now I think that we're starting to realize, to do exactly where you're going with the conversation, that we have to get some specialized knowledge, be it technical or even things like marketing. One of the things I'm doing now is I'm leaning on the graphics departments at the Northern jurisdiction in particular, because we don't have the ability to really provide brochures and stuff that are eye-catching enough that people would take interest in them. I mean, just little things like this that we're having to go beyond our committee. And I think that you'll see that within our group over time, is that we're going to have to search out brothers that probably are not active in Grand Lodge. If they are, maybe they're just doing some particular niche work for Grand Lodge because of their skill sets or their education, the line of work that they're in, that Grand Lodge is using them. They're working within Grand Lodge to fill that gap. Then we find out and we have them help us as well. So yes, I think that because of the way that we've been structured, limited in the past, what we've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, I don't mean to be an ageist, but you know, I think looking ahead, that if, you know, I think that two things need to happen. I think Grand Lodges need to use data and basically figure out a line of demarcation of, you know, what's a membership number where we're treading water, essentially.
Uh-huh.
Where we're not gaining, but we're not losing, and we've got enough lodges and infrastructure in place for, you know, Masonry to potentially have some sort of renewal and grow.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think that, you know, what really needs to happen is that Grand Lodges, Grand Bodies, what have you, they need to engage their membership that are of their target demographic and get their input and get them to help with whatever marketing effort is being put forward from that Grand Lodge perspective. I mean, case in point, you know, the Not a Man Mason, I think, came out in what, 2016, 2017?
Something like that, yes. It's been around, it's 10 years, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's, in marketing terms, it's already old, you know.
Yeah.
It's already dated. So, you know, having our younger membership engaged in, you know, or members of the demographic where you're trying to grow, and maybe it's not, you know, maybe Grand Lodges decide, well, maybe we just don't quite understand Gen Z and we shouldn't be targeting them. Well, I would agree with that. You shouldn't be targeting them unless you have members of that generation that are leading those efforts, and you have to empower those brothers to, you know, do some of this activity. And mm-hmm. what I tend to see, you know, across the board is, especially in Freemasonry, is that we have a bunch of men that are, you know, boomers or, you know, old Gen X that are for the most part leaders in the bodies. You know, you have some of the one-offs like Billings in Texas, who's, you know, Gen X. I guess I think he's maybe a little younger than I am, but
Brad's, I think, 40, 41.
Yeah, so, you know, you have millennial Gen Xers that are entrenched in some places, but I would say, you know, I'm not making a generalization when I were to say that most of the Masonic leadership is boomer generation, and that the you know, way that boomers see the world and see things is vastly different than what, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha buy. I think it's Gen Alpha behind them, how they see the world. And, you know, I think that what Grand Lodges and Grand Bodies don't do, and I'm glad to hear that your committee is looking at doing this, is that they don't leverage the strengths of their membership or the generations within their membership and get them involved and empower them to, you know, bring Freemasonry to their generation. So, mm-hmm. you know, for example, my kids are both early 20s, and, you know, when they talk about Freemasonry, essentially, you know, it's something that old people do, you know, it's not something that they would see their generation doing. And, you know, that's probably because there's not a lot of their generation that's doing it.
Yeah.
So the members that are doing it, those younger members that are doing it, we really need to kind of leverage, okay, why did you join, you know, understand their stories and use their strengths and their ability to communicate with other members, their generations to propagate the idea that Freemasonry really now is needed probably more than ever, given the, you know, the just dichotomy of our nation and the polarization of, you know, not only along political lines, but also I'd say some religious lines as well.
Yeah. You had several points. One, if you get a chance, there's a book I recommend you read. If you remember, one of the early times when I talked to you guys, we talked about the book Bowling Alone, Robert Putnam. Putnam came out with a book a little over a year ago called The Upswing, and I recommend you read it because Putnam addresses a lot of what you just talked about. He makes a comparison with the Gilded Age and Progressive Era and uses data to show that we're not going to devolve into a dystopian, you know, asylum of some sort because we've had these issues before. And he lays it out very well. So if you get a chance, read The Upswing. And then how did our committee arrive at, hey, we got to do something different. We have to step outside our model and do something different. And it was the membership dashboard because the brother, Tim Whelan, put it together. And Tim's like, he still works for a living. Unlike not there, Tim still works for a living. And he's like, I need some help. But the other guys on the committee just don't have that background, right? And you mentioned Brad Billings. Brad is on our committee now. Brad is on our board now. And we brought Brad on for exactly this reason. Is that we've got to start reaching down the pipeline here and get closer to the men that are really joining. I think I saw one state average age was 34, something like that. So we are getting younger men to join, and we do need to understand there's some differences in generations. The other thing you mentioned, which again, The Upswing, Robert Putnam, The Upswing, is social isolation that you were talking about, you hinted at, Darren, that is the Freemasonry, that these young men could benefit from Freemasonry. But how we tripped on it is that Tim needs help, and Brad actually had some brothers there in Texas that do some data work, and these guys are all in their latter 20s and 30s, so he's got them starting to work with Tim. And we sat there and we said, you know what? We've got these other facets that we're working on, and you're not going to find the skill sets to make these happen among past grandmasters. And so that's where we said we have to start doing an outreach. Originally, we started working with some of our reps. We have a rep in each state. But you have to remember, our reps are appointed by a grandmaster. So chances are he's going to appoint a guy he knows, a guy he works with, right? Either a current Grand Lodge officer or a past grandmaster, right? So you've got the same kind of skill sets, the same kind of generational thought. And that's when we realized that we've got to do an outreach and find other sources of helpers, other sources of brothers that will work on some of these projects than what's been our standard institutionalized method of getting help, getting brothers to work. And I think that some of that's been going on in Grand Lodges for some time. They just haven't necessarily realized yet. I know in Indiana, we've had a technology committee for a long time, and there are several brothers on that committee. They may be lodge officers now, but they're not necessarily past masters yet.
Yeah, it's what you described, Roger, is extremely hopeful, I think, you know, and looking at things in a different way, because I mean, many organizations face the same thing. They go with who they're comfortable with, and overlook the talent that's sitting right there in front of them. Higher education was no different. We'd tend to go to the same.
Because we're talking people, right? Yeah. We're talking people, right? Yeah. This is the human thing.
Yeah.
You go with what you know.
And so it's, you know, Darren, he and I've talked about it. He's long emphasized, I won't speak for you, but, and he's talked about it tonight, that pipeline development that needs to happen. And we probably got the people already. We just need to reach down, like you say, not just age-wise, but just folks that haven't been involved in Grand Lodge or, you know, other appendant bodies, and find their talents and put them to use. Because I think there's a lot of people that'll help, but they won't necessarily step forward until they're asked. It's just not everybody as foolish as the three of us that say yes to everything. And
you will do
everything because that's just the way it goes. But you know, but there's a lot of talent sitting there waiting to happen. So
no, I so too.
Great. So what I mean, when you do look ahead, because your committee is looking forward, and I think it'd be exciting to be a part of it, just simply for the fact that you're not dwelling on the past. You know, you are looking forward, but you know, I'll ask you to put your crystal ball on. You've got the luxury of the hindsight of, you know, what's went on. But when you do look ahead, I mean, you're an optimistic person by nature, but what do you see for Freemasonry, you know, at any point in time down the road? Pick a time, doesn't matter. But, you know, do you think these things you're talking about, will we be getting acceptance at some point from, you know, the majority of Grand Lodges to where they'll be progressive enough for their own survival?
I'll tell you, it's another one of those things you should ask. And again, I go back and talk about Robert Putnam and his studies. Putnam believes that, and like I said, he uses data to show this, that society does go wax and wane between what he calls individualism and communitarianism. And individualism, he shows from history, are times of great technological advances and widening disparity in income and a rise of what we may refer to as some social ills. During times of communitarianism, he finds that there is a tighter weave of societal fabric. There is not a great discrepancy between political thought like we experience today and the gap between what you may call rich and poor, it shrinks. And he believes that we are close to start moving in that direction. We're not there yet, but he believes that possibly you'll see signs of this within the next decade. Now, one of the things that he talks about is social isolation, and that's something we just talked about, we touched on here earlier, is that young people in particular feel a social isolation that maybe my generation did not. It's possible that some of the technology we have has caused that feeling of that. I think that the world has changed since COVID. I think COVID did have a dramatic effect on society, and it caused us to realize this social isolation. So Freemasonry can play a role in that. Now, I will say that if you read Putnam's The Upswing and you look at the breadth of it, you will see that when he shows the upswing took place between the Gilded Age and Progressive Era, you have to realize it was 60 years. Freemasonry over 60 years grew fourfold. When we talk about the 4 million Masons in the United States in 1960, you have to remember it took 60 years to get there, a lifetime to get there, 60 years to get there. So I don't, it wasn't necessarily just this huge bang and it stuck. It was a curve. It was a, you could lay it on a normal bell curve, distribution curve, and it lines up well with that, with the exception of the depression, where it went down for a while, for just a few years, but then came back prior to World War II. That's the other thing, is a lot of brothers, I know when I was a young man, they would say, well, we grew so much because of World War. Freemasonry in the United States was growing before World War I, and it was still growing after World War I, before World War II, except for just a few years. I mean by a few, just maybe 3 years during the Depression. And then it was growing and kept growing. And then, of course, yes, it did boom. There was a spike after World War II, but it still took 60 years to get to that, from roughly 800,000 members close to the turn of the century to 4 million members. It took 60 years to get there. So where does that leave us today? I think that what's happened, and this was a talk, I gave a talk at the Conference of Grandmasters entitled The Rise of a Masonic Renaissance. And then that little phrase, Masonic Renaissance, has been kicked around some the last few years. And I think that we are in the midst of a Masonic Renaissance where there is a renewed interest. I mean, the podcasts, here's an example, all the Facebook pages. And I think that there's been a rise. There's a tremendous difference in Masonic education and the importance of Masonic education today versus when I became a Mason 40 years ago. So I think that we are seeing a resurgence in interest. The data coming out of the NMJ shows that there's an increase in interest. As a matter of fact, Linda Patch gave a talk at the conference, and they have updated some of their data from 5 years ago or so, and she is showing that they're just like what I just said, in general public, there is more interest in Freemasonry today than there was 5 years ago. One thing I showed was an engram. If you're familiar with Google, Google has this engram program. It tally, it ranks word usage versus volume of books, documents, things like this. And I plugged in the word Freemason, and it was high in the early part of the 20th century, dipped down low, you know, in the 80s, 70s, and 90s. In the last 20 years, it has been steadily increasing, the use of the word Freemason in documents, books, articles, periodicals, blogs, things like this. So I think that we are starting to see this resurgence, this renewal, this renaissance of Freemasonry. What my talk was about was my generation of grandmasters were the ones that said, boy, if we have one-day classes, we'll fix all of our problems. Well, if we change the rules of solicitation, we'll fix our problems. If we lower the age from 21 to 18, we'll fix our problems. If we get rid of this catechism thing, we'll fix our problems. All of those things, I have stood on the floor of the Grand Lodge of Indiana and said, here's a change we need to make. And this is where some of the comments about mossbacks and old fogies came from, because the brothers that were older generation than my generation were against any changes, no changes. We had a joke about our grand lecturer was out visiting a lodge, and the master says, here, come over here. You need to meet Brother Joe here. Brother Joe's been the tiler of this lodge. He's been the tiler of this lodge for 50 years. And the grand lecturer goes over and talks to him. He says, Brother Joe, it's great to meet you. You have been tiler of this lodge for 50 years. And Joe says, yes, sir, I have. He goes, the grand lecturer says, I bet in those 50 years you have seen a lot of changes. And Joe says, yes, I have, and I've been against every one of them. And that was the thing back then. And in my generation, we were the guys 20, 25 years ago that birthed the one-day classes. We were the guys, when I was getting into the Grand Lodge line, it was 21 years old, vast 21 years old throughout the country to become a Freemason. By the time I got out of the Grand Lodge line, In Indiana, it was down to 18, and many of the other states had brought it down to 18. We changed the rules of solicitation, defined it better. We didn't allow just mass handing out petitions, but we encouraged you to talk to a man, and if you thought he was qualified, yes, you could ask him to consider joining the Masons. We changed the catechism. We made catechism optional. We just said, here's the minimum, but you have to have a mentoring program. And then we were not good about following up a mentoring program. We're now promoting mentoring, something that when I joined Lodge, it was unheard of because you expected the catechism memorized, and that was a mentoring program, because as you were memorizing the catechism, you were also just learning other things about Freemasonry, because you would have a question about, what does this phrase mean, right? And my generation did all that, thinking that we were going to grow Freemasonry because of all these obstacles there that's keeping us from growing, and it wasn't. It was a societal change, and we didn't understand that. Now we do. And what we're also realizing now is it's about the fundamentals, that if a lodge does an outstanding degree, provides a true Masonic experience of brotherhood, education, mentoring, fellowship, that lodge will not only survive, but that lodge will thrive. And if that lodge can be visible in the community, again, that lodge will thrive. We have lodges that are thriving well. We just don't have enough of them yet, and we need to teach other lodges. Here's the key to be successful. And if we did that, I think Freemasonry can grow. Is it going to be 4 million members in 10 years? No, but it wasn't that way either. It took 60 years to get to 4 million members. And I think that it's a possibility, and we could actually show, again, that we are a benefit to society and a benefit to men, and to give them an opportunity to grow as men in what we would call, in to use a modern phrase, in a safe space. So, yeah, I think there's an opportunity, and I think that it may take a few years yet to see it. But now, I know Creason belongs to the Odd Fellows. And Darren, do you belong to the Odd Fellows?
Greg and I both belong.
Okay. My understanding, because I'm not an Odd Fellow, but I follow them a lot. There's a podcast that I listen to often, the Three Links Oddcast, and I'm seeing where Odd Fellowship is growing.
Yeah, in fact, I think one of the hosts, isn't Ainsley one of the hosts?
Yes, he is.
Right?
Yeah, so yes, he is.
Ainsley is involved with the lodge that Greg and I belong to in Tuscola, Illinois.
Okay,
Actually, Greg and I have talked about getting Ainsley on here, but yeah, Ainsley is really awesome, passionate individual that has really single-handedly brought that lodge, which was defunct, back from the grave and made it, I would say, probably one of the top lodges for Odd Fellows in Illinois. And he is very much really kind of the identity of that lodge is very artistic.
Uh-huh.
And it works for them. I've not visited, honestly, last time I visited, I think, was pre-COVID, so I need to get back down there. But I'm still a dues-paying member, and, you know, I converse with Ainsley occasionally, you know, through Facebook Messenger, but he's really awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah, and so I listen to their podcast. I follow a lot of their Facebook pages, and they seem to be able to, they're catching attention, because they're just doing some basic stuff. They're working to create a friendly, warm, inclusive environment, and they're focusing on good that they can do with their communities. And I just see page after page where it talks about, yeah, a few years ago we were about to give up, but boy, here, just this last month, we initiated 5 people. My lodge initiated 5 people. We wouldn't know what to do, you know? And so I think that you will see, I think Putnam's correct. You're going to see us swing different. The pendulum will swing, and you'll see American society over time become more communitarian, and it's those periods of time that Freemasonry grows. Look back at American history. The era of good feeling was a period of communitarian, if you used Putnam's idea, you could apply that to the era of good feeling, and that is when over a third of the Grand Lodges in this country were founded, and Freemasonry was growing. And what came after that was what devolved into the Civil War. Also, what came after that was the anti-Masonic period. And then you do see a resurgence of Freemasonry after the Civil War, but it flattens out through the Gilded Age. And then it starts growing again in the Progressive Era. So I think that it's not just Freemasonry. I think that you'll see it just in community-based organizations. It's not a Masonic thing. It's a community-based organization thing. The decline of Masonic membership is the same as the decline of United Methodist Church. It's the same as the decline in Rotary and Elks and all these groups because people didn't participate in community-based organizations. PTA, that stuff. And Putnam uses data to show that this is not unique. It happens. Maybe it doesn't happen in a 60, 70-year swing like it did in the 20th century. But still, you can look back at other parts of history and you can see this wax and wane, at least in the United States, if not North America, and possibly other parts of the world. We know that the decline Freemasonry membership is an English-speaking issue. Freemasonry is growing, has been growing for some time in Mexico, South America, and Europe, Africa. Freemasonry has been growing for a number of years. So it's an English-speaking problem. And the reason why I keep referring to Putnam is I first read Putnam's book. He published his Bowling Alone in 2000. And if you've read his book and kept to it, everything Putnam said that would happen to society is happening and has been happening. And you can read his predictions, and it's exactly where we are today. So I have to believe, and again, with him using data and some of the history models he uses, I have to believe that the upswing is true. And it is part two of Bowling Alone, I guess you could say. But I would recommend you get the book, The Upswing, and read it. And if it's true, this is the time for Masonic Lodges to return to fundamentals and do things like outstanding degree work, mentoring, community visibility, fellowship-based, make friends with the brothers of your lodge, create a community of your lodge, and we'll start growing again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Roger. So just because you said I should buy it, I did, at least on Audible, because I had a credit. But we were recording just so while as I start getting my walking program going again, I will listen to Putnam. But you know this, I'll just talk briefly about one more book because it really sort of echoes it. And I think they talked about Putnam's book in this one. It's called The Fourth Turning.
And okay.
It's similar in the aspect that it talks about these cycles of society. And it's funny, this book was written in 1997
by
William Strauss and Neil Howe. And at the end of it, they're talking about things 20 years ahead. And so I figure, well, that was about 2020. And they are so spot on in what they are talking about. It's like they were in the future. And one of the things they do in their book is they're talking about generations and how generations interact with one another and how, to your point with Putnam as well, they can predict over time with the characteristics of these generations because they're repeatable over history.
Yeah.
And they'll say there's five or six generations at a time. And these generations, you know, form certain characteristics, you know, greatest generation, the silent generation, you know, each of them play off each other in a certain way so that over that lengthy period of time, it is somewhat predictable on what's going to happen. And I think, you know, you really got me thinking about it again, that especially it was so interesting to talk, to hear you talk about all those things that, you know, and you're not just you as Grandmaster, but that era of people, the one day classes and all those things, you know, we thought that was going to be the fix.
Yeah, really.
And, you know, hey, you got to try things, right?
But yeah.
But I think to your real point is it's those fundamentals that we need to go back to be good at, that I think so many of us have been saying this for some
years.
Articles on Midnight Freemasons or podcasts.
No, you're exactly right.
It's just it's very optimistic to hear you say it, but and the Masonic Renewal Committee and others that are recognizing that, you know, look, we gotta improve our basics, because the clock may catch up with us one way or the other. Either we'll fail, or we'll be prepared for if there is another, you know, time and place when community is a focus for so many people and they want to join the lodge and other groups. You know, if you look at, it's interesting you talk about the Odd Fellows. You know, the Odd Fellows, I would argue, probably were ahead of us on these cycles in regards to bottoming out. And people like Ainsley, who is a friend of Darren and I's, great, great individual. He's just a shining light in Odd Fellowship. But, you know, they have states where Odd Fellowship almost disappeared. And I think that's what Darren was alluding to, you know, earlier with some of the Masonic body.
Yes.
But if they get the grid, hopefully they won't come back. But if we're prepared, even if we're, our numbers are going to continue to go down.
Yeah.
No way they won't. But if we're prepared for that day and have good solid lodges that are active, people will begin knocking on the door. I'm firmly convinced. We see this. I'm involved in scouting. Our scout
Yes.
numbers are probably at a low. I bet our graph would look exactly like the Masonic membership.
I bet this too.
We dipped, you know, below a million members, and we probably at one time also had 3 to 4 million members.
Sure.
So it's that same thing.
Same cycle.
It is that.
Yeah. No, I think that Putnam's right. I think the society vacillates between degrees of individualism and communitarianism.
Yeah.
And depending on where you are on the curve is where your memberships have. Like I said, remember, Freemasonry just didn't overnight get 4 million members. We didn't have 4 million members from the signing of the Declaration of Independence, right?
Yeah.
We were around 800,000 in the United States in the 1890s, and it took us 60 years to get to 4 million. And I think this change is going to reflect the same. We'll have some bottoming out. We'll have some slow growth. We'll complain that things aren't growing fast enough. But the men in the future, when they look back, they'll see the same curve, and it will take us decades to get back to that, but that's okay. That's okay.
Well, we're getting long here, but I want to give Darren an opportunity to see if he has any last thoughts or any last questions for you.
I mean, I could pick Roger's brain for hours.
We
literally could talk all night, but there's one thing I do want to just touch on briefly, Roger, and
sure.
And hopefully we can get a brief answer from you. But what is the, I guess, majority opinion from that organization regarding some of the things that UGLE is doing? Because I personally think that they're long overdue, but I also see that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be maybe a time in history coming, you know, very soon, where I truly believe that UGLE is going to recognize women's Freemasonry as being regular, and you're going to have intervisitation between lodges over there. And I think that, you know, obviously we don't have, you know, it's very much a different culture over there, and the lodges of women Freemasons here in the United States are few and far between. But all that being said, there are other things that they're doing that are very progressive. And I know that that I got to dance kind of gently here, but, you know, I know that a lot of the things that they're doing that are progressive are the opposite of edict that are coming out from various grand lodges. So, you know, is there going to be a time in the future where you're going to see grand lodges try to, you know, basically not have fraternal relations with the Mother Grand Lodge in UGLE, or do you think they'll just kind of say, well, they're doing their own thing and that's fine, but that's not something that can happen here?
Okay. So let's talk about when
you can, yeah, I think you can read between the lines.
No, let's talk about feminine Freemasonry real quick. First thing is, you guys need to talk to Akram Elias. Akram is a past Grand Master of District of Columbia. His wife was the first master of the lodge that, and I always get the two confused, there's two predominant feminine grand lodges in the UK. I always get them confused. But one of them, she was a member of, and they chartered a lodge in D.C., and she was a first master. And Akram is a past Grand Master of D.C. Akram gave a great presentation at the conference about feminine Freemasonry, and he made some excellent points, and I would highly, I'll see if I got contact for him. You guys need to have him on your show. You need to have him on your show. Here's what I think's happening. I think that conversations about it in the United States is better than what it was 10 years ago, definitely 20 years ago. The other problem is this is primarily a Preston Webb problem. You look at emulation ritual, there is not a prohibition in the ritual as we're accustomed to with Preston Webb-based rituals. That's why whenever the conversation happens, it's the guys in the United States that lose their heads. Okay. It's something that seems to exist in our ritual that doesn't exist in other rituals. And then when you take into consideration that the predominant ritual in the world is emulation or emulation-based, and it doesn't have this prohibition, and then you understand why it does, and I don't know about Pennsylvania, but because their ritual's not necessarily Preston Webb-based like the rest of us, but all of us have a prohibition in there. It spells it out pretty plainly. So that's why it's usually guys in the United States that lose their minds whenever on Facebook you have a picture of a woman wearing a Masonic apron. But I think that could change somewhat over time. The thing that I appreciate about what England is doing, has done with the feminine Freemasonry, is that they acknowledge they exist, but they say other than their practice, initiating women is regular, that the irregularity is in the fact that they do not initiate women. The other thing that's happening in Freemasonry, and I think this is that coming out of my generation, is that the question of, is Freemasonry a philosophy or is it a club? And I think that over time we're realizing Freemasonry is a philosophy. And if that is the case, then there are room for more than just our obedience. Okay. Now, what I also appreciate about the United Grand Lodge of England's position is the fact that I believe, and I think I'm backed up in some studies. I'll have to do a little bit more research, but I believe that men and women socialize differently. And I believe that there should be, I'm not trying to use a cliche, because there is some truth to this. I think there is a safe space for men to associate with men, not this quote unquote toxic masculinity, but guys like us. I think that Freemasonry offers an opportunity for us to have a safe space for us to socialize in. And I think women should be offered the same opportunity. I understand the ideas of inclusivity, and I understand that at work, I work with a diverse work group, and I understand that the positives of inclusivity. But I also think that I have benefited from the fact that I'm part of a men-only fraternal organization. And I think that women would benefit from similar organizations, be they a form of Freemasonry or be they a sorority per se. So I appreciate what the United Grand Lodge of England is doing, and I think that it is forward thinking. I'm just going to differ a little with you on inner visitation, because the things I have read coming from the women's organizations, the feminine Grand Lodges, the women are saying, well, we don't want the men around. And I think that's because they understand that when men and women are together, there's a different dynamic in how conversations and socializing takes place. And they are saying, we don't want the men. And I think as long as that happens, you will have this separation. But they are working together in community for community benefit things, community charity work and such. They do work together. It's just that when they're in their tiled recesses, when they're in their what we call our sacred retreats, which could be another word for safe space, but sacred retreats, it's gender specific. And I have an appreciation for that because, as I said, I do believe men and women socialize differently. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And do I think that we'll ever change our ritual? No. But I think there could be a time, I don't know if it'd be in my lifetime, but it's starting in my lifetime because the Grand Lodge of California openly says, we acknowledge these other groups. We have working relationships with these other groups. You see it going on in D.C., and I think it's going to start spilling over to some of those states. And we all know that fads and trends and whatever happens in this country usually starts on the coast and the seaboard, and then eventually it comes to southern Indiana and central Illinois. And so I think that, like I said, I don't know if I'll see a bunch of feminine, you know, Order of Women Freemason lodges in Indiana or not, but you never know. Before I leave this earth, maybe there will be an Order of Women Freemasons lodge in Indianapolis. I don't know. That the Grand Lodge at least acknowledges that, yeah, they exist. And if your wife wants to be a Freemason, have her petition that lodge. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting dynamic. I don't necessarily disagree with things you said, but I also will say, you know, as an Odd Fellow and having been part of their meetings, you know, as a co-ed organization and having women in a lodge setting, I didn't feel any of the, I guess, sexual politics or dynamic that, you know, you kind of refer to, but I also think it depends upon the lodge. And, you know, that lodge in Tuscola is very special. And I think, you know, they all have the same goal for that lodge, doing their charity work, doing the community outreach and doing their, you know, their ritual and having that fellowship with each other and being comfortable with each other. So, you know, I think there are lessons that, you know, could be pulled from that to potentially help Freemasonry and its future.
Yeah. I'll send you a note about for Akram. Akram makes a good point. He talks about influential women in society, right? And he talks about, wouldn't it be great if they were Freemasons type of thing? Because we look back at history and we pointed at these great Americans in particular that were leaders in different industries or science or education, things like this, that is different today because it is more inclusive society. And no, you're right. Odd Fellowship seems to be able to make the co-ed things work. Well, Eastern Star has for generations, right? And so maybe there is a place. I don't know. I just tend to think that men and women do socialize differently, and there is something about a safe space or a sacred retreat for men, for women. It's an opportunity that maybe you have, maybe you don't have when you have co-ed, I don't know. But I tend to think that they still have some socializing differences that one can make an argument for a male-only or a female-only organization still valuable in this so-called inclusive society that we're in.
Again, I'm not saying that I'm supportive of co-masonry. I'm just saying that I think that there are other organizations like the Odd Fellows where we can look at and see this dynamic and look at potential for, you know, ideas, concepts, how they are very, I would say, more inclusive than Freemasonry, which, you know, I find Freemasonry is a majority of Masonic lodges are very conservative makeup. So, you know, I think that breaking kind of down that barrier is going to probably maybe not happen in my lifetime, but in order for Freemasonry to survive, I think that we're going to have to look at, you know, societal trends and try to be more inclusive for individuals that may want to be Freemasons but are prohibited from doing so for various reasons.
Well, and this is a human thing, right? This is a human nature. I'll give you an example. I have said before that if the Brothers of Boston would have been as enlightened as the brethren that formed the Premier Grand Lodge said they would, there wouldn't be Prince Hall Freemasonry, because they would have taken Prince Hall into their lodges and we would have been integrated in the 1770s. So it's just, I don't know, I think it's just a human thing over time. So we'll see what happens. But I think that you're right. The United Grand Lodge of England is doing some things that the rest of us should at least watch and see.
Yeah. No doubt. I think, Roger, one of your first points tonight was, you know, even you look at your committee that you're on, the work that's done there, the programs that come out of that are often the pace setters for others that end up following, you know, some at quicker paces than others. But
sure,
if nothing else, change is always inevitable. You know, even,
yes,
even if Freemasonry thinks nothing changes, well, there are innovations in Freemasonry. It's just called progress. Yeah. And most of the people they don't like recognizing that, but they do. And I think that's, you know,
yeah,
I can summarize all the conversation we had here tonight. It's clear that that's what happens. Masonry is aggressive moral functions.
Nice.
You know, we talked about, you know, doesn't mean it stays the same. It means its values and such can stay the same. But we are reflective of society at any given time of our history. So
true, but true, true.
We really appreciate you being on. I mean, like Darren got, we could probably pick your brain for another 3 or 4 hours, which means you'll have
no. I sat here and talked to you guys all night.
I think if you know, we'll tell our listeners. It's like, boy, if you haven't listened to any of our episodes, make sure you listen to number 62, because you're going to find all the cutting edge of all the stuff that's being talked about, not just on your committee, but elsewhere.
Yeah, but elsewhere, yeah.
You know, and the other thing I would add, for a lot of us Masonic pundits, it should give hope that a lot of the things we talk about on these podcasts and in blogs, et cetera, we're not talking to an empty crowd. And it's not,
no,
you know, our voices are the ones that have changed anything, but it's part of that conversation, and it should be extremely encouraging to people, to membership, to know that those conversations are happening, maybe not as fast as they might want, but there is a recognition that we are going to evolve, and if we're going to do that, we need to meet it head on, and that's what the work of your committee and others are doing.
Yes, and I'll tell you, just another history thing. You look at social movements in the United States, any social movement was not one group or one individual. They were similar groups, came together, had a similar theme. I don't care if it was abolitionism, if it was a temperance movement or civil rights movement. I think it was a CORE, the Committee on Racial Equality, that had organized the March on D.C., of which Martin Luther King gave his speech, I Have a Dream. Martin Luther King, his group was the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He was just on the docket that day to talk, and he supported the event. and he supported CORE. John Lewis, I believe, was the leader of CORE. So here are different groups. When we think of the civil rights movement, one homogenous group, it wasn't. It was a bunch of different groups. All social movements have different groups that come together. Freemasonry is no different. Everything that's going on in Freemasonry right now is not one particular group, one podcast. It's a lot of us saying the same things, and it's catching on mainstream.
Yeah.
And that's how social movements happen.
Right.
I think that's what we're seeing in Freemasonry today.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I've been in 15 years, and I've seen this evolution, you know. There's so many more people talking about the need for Masonic education and brotherhood and all the other things that we've mentioned tonight to get back to the basics. More of those people are going to be a majority of the membership over time. And, well, as you said, different groups are going to come together, and I'm extremely optimistic about the future of Freemasonry and the craft, because to me it's more than just numbers. It's more about the impact we make on individuals.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's a great episode. And so, Roger, you're a great friend to Jaron.
Can I take just one cheap shot at you guys?
Because
this is what I was going to open with.
Go right ahead.
And you guys threw me a curve with asking me, what do I do? Because I was going to open with, since the last time I talked to you guys, Jaron got hitched. And I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was wonderful that a man of his character would take on a wife, because I've seen pictures of her on Facebook, attractive woman. Yet obviously, she must have some mental capacity issue. Definitely, she has a visual impairment. And so I appreciate a man of his character doing that. And with you, Greg, I understood that you lost your job as a crossing guard for the school, and you've been unemployed for a while. And I hear you've been bumming around Danville, and I hope you get somebody hires you. And then we all know that Hostler's in the hospital. I heard that he was doing some kind of cranium examination, trying to find where his head was. And so hopefully,
we might have rolled him over and it was on his backside.
No, but it's been a while since I talked to you. I'm glad to see that Darren's decided to ruin his life again and get married. And no, I hope retirement's treating you okay. No, I see his Facebook and it looks like he's happy and everything's going great.
Yeah,
It looks like you're on well retirement, and Bill is Bill.
That's it. I can't think of any better way to sum up Bill than Bill is Bill.
Correct. Yeah. I love the guy to death, but Bill is Bill.
Bill.
Okay. Well, again, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. Please share this podcast, specifically this episode, because again, a lot of great information in here. We'll have Roger back again. We're going to get in touch with Akram Elias, because I think that's a fascinating episode waiting to happen. And we appreciate all of you, and we hope you have a great day until next time of another exciting episode of Meet, Act, and Part.
Thank you for listening to Meet, Act, and Part. For more information about our show, visit our website at www.meetactandpart.com. While there, please consider supporting the show by sponsoring us on Patreon. Until we meet again, may we meet, act, and part.